You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Green Left Weekly Radio.
There's one newspaper that is independent of powerful capitalist interests, and that is Green Left Weekly.
It's the people's voice, committed to human and civil rights, ecological sustainability, democracy and equality. It presents ideas that the mainstream media won't.
Green Left is a leading source of local, national and international news with analysis, discussion and debate to strengthen the anti-capitalist movement.
It helps expose the lies of the capitalist press and puts the voices of the marginalised and the oppressed at the centre of fighting for a better world and helps us understand the political developments unfolding around us.
Good morning, listeners. You are listening to Green Left Radio, and we're coming to you live from 3CR or 855 AM on your dial, or maybe you are streaming live from 3cr.org.au or listening back to a podcast. Wherever you are, thank you for joining us today. And we're joined today by myself, Jacob Andrewafa, and we have...
Chloe here. Good morning, listeners. Good morning, Jacob.
Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge that 3CR and Green Left recognise that this show is being broadcasted from the land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung, the Wurundjeri rightful sovereign owners, storytellers and caretakers of the land. Australia was founded on the attempted genocide and dispossession of the First People, and we recognise that this attempted genocide is ongoing. As socialists, we pledge to actively support decolonisation. We stand with all the First Peoples in their struggle for justice and their right to land.
So I've got some...
I was just passing it on to you, Chloe.
Yeah. We've got an interesting show this Friday, listeners. We've got three interviews. Firstly, we're going to interview Jonathan Strauss. Jonathan is a Socialist Alliance member on the National Executive. He's a Labor historian and a former NTU James Cook University branch president. He's going to talk to us about Gillian Siegel's authoritarian anti-Semitism plan. And then around 7:40, we're going to be interviewing the newly elected Assistant Secretary, Mitch van der Wert-Holman of the CPSU group in the Victorian branch, to talk about the incredible victory of a voice for members, the ticket win. And then we're going to have the activist calendar at 8, and at 8:10 we're going to be interviewing the ALDE sacked RAFU member, ALDE worker from Kilo Downs, and also a health and safety representative, Sadie Simmons. She's going to be in person. She's joining us in person in the studio, so we're really looking forward to that interview as well.
Okay, so maybe just kind of start off the program with a bit of discussion of some headline kind of news discussion. Not sure if people follow the social media of Anthony Albanese, but one of the kind of interesting kind of things is he recently kind of made a visit to China, and one of the kind of things, and this is sort of very classic kind of capitalist kind of politician stuff, but essentially, he, you know, did a lot of kind of social media videos about, you know, how China is what our biggest trading partner, you know, and we're committed to strengthening that relationship for the national interests of Australians. And I think that, you know, as Albanese is making has made his visit to China, I mean, I think it's kind of important to kind of open up this important discussion about the AUKUS agreement. And we've actually recently published an article that was published by Peter Boyle on making the argument that Labor must abandon AUKUS now. And the article kind of... To draw on a few points from the article, which you can read on greenleft.org.au, Peter Boyle makes the kind of point that Anthony Albanese is failing to win people to Labor's a commitment to the aggressive $368 billion AUKUS nuclear-powered submarine and military integration deal. And he points to the fact that there was a YouGov poll conducted between June 27th and July 3rd that found that 66% supported a parliamentary inquiry into the AUKUS security agreement. This poll that was commissioned by the Australian Institute said fewer than half those surveyed believed that the agreement would make the country a safer place. And I think one of the things as well is one of the reasons, one of the contexts for this is the fact that, you know, in the United States under Donald Trump, you know, Donald Trump has used the US military, really the most powerful in the world, to support Israel's genocide in Gaza, to illegally bomb Iran, and has ultimately played this role of bullying the rest of the world with tariffs. And you also have the fact that that Trump has this total disregard for international and domestic law. And he's made this really unrelenting attack on the US judiciary, International Criminal Court judges, and Francesco Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the occupied Palestinian territories, for daring to criticize Israel's genocide against the Palestinians. So these are all kind of things that has turned world opinion against the United States in a lot of ways. And you also have one of the other things as well that's coming out of this is Trump is attempting to put pressure on the United States' traditional allies into raising military spending to 5% of GDP. In reality, what this will kind of mean in practice, it will come at a great cost to social spending and addressing the climate emergency. And in fact, we're already see the echoes of this in Britain, where Keir Starmer has gone on about how, you know, we need to tighten our belts to increase funding for military. And, you know, the Britain has actually been implementing a lot of different forms of austerity, especially towards disability kind of benefits. And I think really putting all this in its totality, I mean, really what is important to kind of point out is people's suspicion of AUKUS really is coming from the fact that people see the Trump administration as a deadly threat to humanity. And this AUKUS agreement, really, it's not only going to soak up billions of dollars that should be sent on urgent social needs, it very much integrates Australia's military into the US, turning the continent into a giant US military base from which to threaten and possibly wage war on China. But this is all despite the fact, as I was sort of saying, that while the Albanese government is going ahead with this military sort of agreement, it's still giving this sort of message that China is its biggest trading partner, and you know China is not a threat to Australia. And in fact, that was the Prime Minister's joint statement with Chinese Premier Li Qiang, which essentially reaffirmed that. But despite the fact, Albanese government remains completely committed to this. And he has no credible, as Peter Boyle points out, he has no credible argument to justify the dangerous submarine deal, the price of which is expected to rise after the US completes its review. This was made clear from Albanese's July 5th John Curtin oration speech, where the Prime Minister tried to justify the deepening military alliance with the US by comparing himself to World War II Labor Prime Minister John Curtin, who shifted Australia's military alliance from Britain to the US. But I think, you know, at that time, when you put that in context, while Albanese isn't able to say it in these terms, John Curtin in that history very much tried to make the argument that, Australia is a white outpost in Australia, and he championed imperial power and the racist white Australia policy. And Peter Boyle points out, Curtin declared in his speech on December 16, 1941, "Never shall an enemy set foot upon the soil of this country without having once arrayed against it the whole of the manhood of this nation with such strength and quality that this nation will remain forever the home of sons of Britishers who come here in peace in order to establish in the South Seas an outpost of the British race. Our laws have proclaimed the standard of a white Australia. We intend to keep it because we know it to be desirable." So, yeah, this is to kind of finish up. I mean, really, Albanese tries to cast Australia's imperialist alliances as a prevalent interest in the freedom of the region. But really, we have to be honest, the AUKUS agreement is all about Australia maintaining military hegemony in the Asia Pacific, and its alliance with the United States allows it to achieve that. But of course, despite that, there's clearly public opposition to AUKUS, you know, with former Labor MP Prime Minister speaking out, former Labor Prime Minister Paul Keating speaking out, former Foreign Minister Bob Carr, former Coalition Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull, and of course, the former Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade Secretary have all called for the AUKUS deal to be abandoned. And I think, you know, we definitely support those calls.
It's interesting that more Labor Party branches are also passing motions calling to, calling for an opposition to AUKUS. And hopefully we'll see more motions like that at the upcoming ALP conference. What do you think, Jacob?
I think the fact that there's Labor opposition, you know, rank and file Labor opposition, I think is a positive thing. And yeah. I think, you know, the more, you know, we see these kind of splits in the Labor base, I think is kind of better. Mm. And I think ultimately, you know, we want to kind of build a movement that actually forces the Albanese government to abandon the AUKUS agreement. Anyway, maybe it's we can go finish up the discussion. We have our first interview in about 4 minutes. So actually, maybe we could start off actually by playing a song. I think the first suggestion that we'll get to play was Flight B741 by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard. I don't know. Do you have any?
I just wanted to play it because the album it's from is... It's like a cheerful rock album about global collapse, and this song, Antarctica. I'm not sure if that's the song you got loaded, Jacob, but it addresses climate.
Well, the song that was here was Flight B741. Let me go see. Yeah, I'll play that one because that's the one that was listed. All right, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio, and you just heard a song by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Flight B741. And we're joined... Oh, did you just want to say something?
Oh, no.
We're joined by Jonathan Strauss. Jonathan is a Socialist Alliance National Executive Member, a Labour historian, a long-time education worker, and most recently, NTU James Cook University Branch President. And he joins us on the show this morning to talk about Gillian Siegel's authoritarian anti-Semitism plan. Good morning, Jonathan.
Hi, Chloe. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Everyone's good. I hope everyone's good there. I'm coming from the lands of the Jagera and Turrbal people here in Maganjan in Brisbane.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks for waking up early for this interview. Gillian Siegel was appointed by Labor last year as the misnamed special envoy to combat anti-Semitism. Can you firstly tell us about this and her recommendations to the Australian government and maybe some of the misinformation surrounding them?
Well, I mean, her appointment, so Siegel's appointment, is certainly part of an attempt, I think, by people who support the Israeli state to weaponise anti-Semitism against the Palestine Solidarity Movement. So they are looking at ways to defend an apartheid state, that state that is from 28 even quite self-declared as a Jewish state, a state for Jewish people, not for everyone else who lives in the area between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean Sea, which is the area that the Israeli state controls. So that is what they're doing, and that is certainly the position that Gillian Siegel, the Executive Council of Australian Jewry, which claims to be a representative body for Australian Jews, but of course actually represents a particular perspective among that population in terms of its views on Israel and support for Israel. She had that position. The group continues to have that position. She ceased to be the president, I think, towards the end of 2023, and then was the next year appointed to this so-called special envoy position by the current government. So that reflects them sort of setting up an apparatus to conduct this work, and she's produced a report previously which tried to say that all sorts of acts of Palestine solidarity, like marches, putting up stickers that saying that is, you know, actually making the argument that Israel is an apartheid state, are all acts of anti-Semitism. So that was already at that time. Now, she's actually made a set of 13 proposals. There are a number of sort of recommendations, I think 49 altogether, within this plan that basically presents no evidence to support what it proposes in terms of what it claims about rising anti-Semitism. To be clear, we do have instances of anti-Semitism. I do think we can say that firebombing synagogues, you know, and in fact, it's interesting that who's done that has not been identified. We have other kinds of instances, the use of the fear of anti-Semitism by criminals to try and actually do deals with the police, which is there's something interesting about their understanding of how the police work as well. And there are other instances. The neo-Nazis we have who carried banners like Jews hate freedom. I mean, that's just saying that as if all Jews have the same opinions or whatever, as well as just being plain wrong, probably, typically, and more reflects their conspiratorial theories about Jewish people, their anti-Semitism against Jews, or the neo-Nazis, all that kind of thing. And, of course, historically, in Europe in particular, anti-Semitism, that's all real enough. But when she says, oh, we've had this tremendous increase in incidents, she's referring to ECA, the Executive Council reports, which have just added in all the pro-Palestine actions as supposed an anti-Semitic action. So we had these false claims of false claims numerically, as opposed to certainly some important highlighted instances of anti-Semitism. And then the proposals she's actually made, which are primarily designed to actually attack the Palestine Solidarity Movement, to actually say to people they have to have a particular understanding of the Holocaust, of that Nazi attempt to exterminate the Jews and the Roma people of Europe, the othered people in Europe at that time, according to the Nazis. I'll finish on this point. The other thing basically raised is this question of, what about the question of criticism of Israel? Well, the problem is she says that criticism of Israel is supposedly okay, but then she says you can't actually say it's an apartheid, can't actually say that the Israeli state practices apartheid. I think the evidence is very clear that, in fact, there's one set of laws in that whole region, or one set of laws for the Israeli Jewish nationality within that territory, and then different laws that are oppressive, apply to the different ways to different parts of the Palestinian population there, and that's clearly a form of apartheid. It's a separate, that separateness, if you like. And what democratic people's always done against tyranny is to revolt against that, quite rightly. That is you actually have to bring that existing state structure, that apartheid state structure of the Israeli state. It's declared privileging of the Israeli Jewish population within Israel. It's privileging that into question. That's what has to be done, and that's what the Palestine Solidarity Movement will do in raising up the rights, the national liberation rights of Palestinian people.
Yeah, thanks for that, Jonathan. And I guess the kind of follow-up question I want to kind of ask you about is, what can you tell us about, what can you tell us about the fact that with Julian Siegel, it has been kind of found that her husband has kind of made quite a substantial donation to Advance Australia. And I also want to kind of talk about, I want to kind of hear your comments about, in this context, the Albanese government's kind of blind kind of support for these recommendations. Because, I mean, just a kind of point to kind of add, I mean, we've had this Royal Commission into Black Deaths in Custody that was done, it was done when I was actually born in 1991, but the government to this date still hasn't implemented many of the kind of recommendations. Yet what we're seeing is we're having state governments and federal governments rushing to implement a lot of the recommendations that Julian Siegel is kind of putting forward in terms of this combating anti-Semitism. So I want to kind of hear your comments, because I think these two questions are kind of linked, like the question of like the scandal around her alleged links to Advance Australia, but also why the Albanese government is so prepared to just implement these recommendations, despite the fact that it's clear that Albanese probably knew about these connections.
Yeah, look, I think the first thing to say is she already had form around her past presidency of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. The donation stuff has come up, and her response is, I'm not responsible for what my husband does. And I'm happy to accept that she didn't actually decide on these things. And what I find strange is perhaps it wasn't discussed. But having said that, we're actually dealing with someone who, at least a few years ago, was dealing in property in Sydney worth tens of millions of dollars. And maybe people like that don't bother to discuss donations of tens of thousands of dollars to groups like Advance Australia and the Liberal Party as well in this case. But having said that, if you look at the rules that relate to questions of conflict of interest, or what's called apprehension of bias, there's, you know, belief that someone will have a bias around a question in sort of corporate dealings and political decision making, you don't accept that people with this sort of association are making decisions with an open mind. So what I'm saying is these donations, what it does is it adds to the picture that you're always going to get the kinds of recommendations you're going to get from Gillian Siegel having appointed her to this position. Yeah, so they basically, they just build up that picture that they knew what they were going to get. It's the same discussion that comes over Royal Commissions. You appoint the judge that you, you know, you appoint the judicial person that you expect will give you the results you want. In this case, they've appointed someone that they could not expect results other than what they were going to get around these recommendations. At this stage, I'd say that's probably the key thing to say about the recommendations in terms of what we can be certain of. It's true the government hasn't declared it's going to implement these recommendations, but they certainly haven't come out against them either. You're quite right. State governments are carrying out a range of legal changes which are destroying our protest rights. Siegel has actually said she doesn't want demonstrations in the cities, and the kinds of situations they're creating where they say you can't have demonstrations, can't have here or there or elsewhere. Around religious bodies, which is what different state governments are doing, trying to do, or the police are trying to implement in practice by trying to refuse permits where permits are required and so on. It all goes, this thing of trying to suppress the street movement and, of course, the movement on the campuses is the other area where this is happening for Palestine solidarity. And the claim, I mean, Siegel went into an interview and she said, like, there's been, she said, literally, it said, literally, what she'd said, there's extreme violence on the streets. That's not a direct quote, but that, I've reversed the wording, I think, but that's more or less what she said. Now, that's just not true. There have, and I've referred to the actual violence in Kuna. Firebombing is a problem. Yeah, it is actually, you know, firebombing synagogues is a problem. But it's not the street demonstrations that are the issue here. They are people coming out together to manifest, to show their support for Palestine solidarity. Not violent. It's just normal democratic expression of a position, which other people won't like necessarily, but they've got to live with that. That's what democracy is about. People have alternative views, and you've got to live with the fact that some people don't like what you're doing. So that's that. As for the government, yeah, I do think they will find... They're probably testing the waters and what they can get away with. I think it's important that a whole range of groups, including certainly not limited to, I mean, obviously Australian groups like Socialist Alliance, other campaigning groups, the Australian Palestine Advocacy Network have come out against these recommendations and as a whole, so have a number of Jewish organisations, such as the Jewish Council of Australia, which certainly represents the many Jews who are rethinking. Because Zionism probably was the dominant view among Jews, you know, in recent decades. Wasn't historically, but in recent decades. But many are now, especially young ones, are now rethinking that, especially in the US, but also here. So all those groups come out, and it's actually our opposition that will tend to limit their capacity to implement these recommendations and potentially even reverse the situation and help actually turn this attempt to weaponise anti-Semitism on its head and instead give us the result that, in fact, we advance the Palestine solidarity movement further.
Yeah, this is all very disturbing, Jonathan, as pointed out by the Coalition of Women for Justice and Peace, which includes Jewish women, saying that Australia, you know, pointing out that Australia already has strong anti-racism protections under the Racial Discrimination Act and sections 18C and 18D are always under attack by the right. But these laws make it unlawful to offend or intimidate based on race or ethnicity. And they already provide a solid foundation for combating anti-Semitism without compromising open discourse. You've told us a little bit about some of the anti-Zionist Jewish groups' response to the so-called special envoy, or as you call it in your article, this racist, colonialist, pro-genocide plan. Maybe you could just tell us a little bit more about what we can do to counterpose the government and the media efforts to suppress pro-Palestine solidarity and the settler colonialist attitudes of Segal and Albanese.
So Segal's plan has nothing to do with combating racism. Mm. It is directed against the Palestine solidarity movement. Anti-Semitism does need to be opposed. It needs to be opposed as one of the forms of racism, quite historical but very definite and still existing form of racism in Australian society. We actually have, of course, Islamophobia here, for example, and there have been ongoing situations of attacks on mosques and so on, which never have raised these same sort of concerns, particularly as you are pointing to, among right-wing forces. These right-wing forces have been complaining that, say, on universities, there's supposedly been a suppression of free speech. But as soon as the speech that's being made on universities, after a number of years in which probably there haven't been significant social movement struggles coming through universities, the solidarity that students have shown in Palestine has been very important. As soon as that happens, they want free speech suppressed on the universities. And we've seen a number of students and staff attacked, on students particularly expelled, staff attacked. We had the Antoinette Latouf case. Unfortunately, that's been able to be exposed. The question of the harassment, no harassment, the lobbying of by pro-Israeli people organised in certain ways, organising groupings to sort of lobby senior figures in these institutions to try and get rid of people who are actually just doing nothing more than telling the truth about what's happening in Palestine, including publishing stuff, and in Latouf's case, publishing stuff that the ABC had already published anyway on her social media. There are existing anti-racism laws. More importantly, there's an anti-racism movement. Many people, including those Jewish groups, are actually becoming part of that anti-racism movement. That's the way to fight racism in this country. And yes, when laws can be used, and they should be used, but the main thing is to build a solid social force to say racism no way, which is also includes the question of providing refugees who still are on temporary visas with permanent settlement here. Of course, that's a big thing. Settling the question of treaties with our First Nations. I say our First Nations, but of course, with First Nations in Australia. I should correct myself. And so on. Make the struggle for Palestine solidarity also a struggle against racism in this country.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Jonathan. I was thinking we could wrap up this kind of interview. I mean, you kind of ended it quite well there, but is there any kind of final comments that you would like to kind of make? I would also just like to make a bit of a comment as well to say that, people who are listening to Green Left Radio right now, Jonathan Strauss actually recently published an article in Green Left about this whole Julian Segal plan. So I just recommend looking on the website to have a read of his article. It's also a good article to kind of link around to any of your friends and family, because I think it's a very good kind of explanation of opposition to why left-wing people need to kind of oppose this. But yeah, Jonathan, do you have any kind of final comments you want us to end us with?
I'll just refer back two things. I'll refer back to the my previous point of saying basically we just have to develop our particular arguments and campaigning against this plan as part of the broader struggle for Palestine solidarity and against racism. Another thing is say yes. I mean, certainly read Green Left to find out about that. The what's going on with Palestine solidarity struggle around the country, but also about the kinds of discussions and thinking that people involved in the movement engaged in. Personally, I'm certainly planning to do... One of the things that the plan says is that everyone ought to adopt a particular definition, the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition. I'm working on an article which explains the weaknesses of that definition as one of definition of anti-Semitism. It's weaknesses, and in fact, it's the problems of actually adopting that as a definition. And instead, I'll be starting to examine other approaches to that question.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jonathan. And I think this has been a very important kind of interview, and I think it's going to be a very important kind of discussion that the Palestine Solidarity Movement needs to have. And I think the Palestine Solidarity Movement needs to come out against this whole plan by the Albanese government. And also, really, I think it also has a lot of importance for us because the state of government here is attempting to kind of implement repressive measures targeting the pro-Palestine movement. Thank you very much, Jonathan, for bringing up our
ground.
Thanks, Jonathan. If you're just now tuning in to Green Left Radio, we were just having a chat with Jonathan Strauss, who's a Socialist Alliance member and long-time education worker. He was talking about Gillian Seagull's racist, colonialist, pro-genocide plan, and you can read more about it on greenleft.org.au.
So, also, I'll just go play a quick announcement. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, 855 AM.
As the Taco Helm apocalypse approaches us with impending doom, it's time for the best alternative comedy debate in NAMM.
Join us for the 21st annual Green Left Comedy Debate, where progressive comedians will debate whether or not billionaires should run the government.
Featuring your famous, award-winning comedian Tom Ballard as our MC, with the brilliant talents of Nikki Barry, Hellchild, Shirley Hood, Rose Callahan, Sarah Bartolo, and David Fowles.
It will be happening at Saturday, August 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall, with dinner and doors open at 6:30 p.m. with the show beginning at 8 p.m.
There'll be food, drinks and laughter, and special guest, President Donald Dump, leading the positive team. Take it away, Don.
It's going to be a big debate, a great debate, a beautiful debate. I thought of it, by the way.
And all proceeds to the event will go towards activist media Green Left. So come along and join us on Saturday, August the 9th at the Brunswick Town Hall. And book your tickets by going onto the Green Left website or visiting greenleft.org/events. Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR. We're going to go to a song before we go to our next interview. This is Down Under, Under One Song, Sun by King Stingray.
Thank you. I come from the land down under, all on board my Australia. Go back here, Wanga Lily. Walk back, Manawanga. Living under one sun. Can you feel the wonder? I come from the land down under. Follow on board my Australia. Go Marikia Wanga Lili. Bookmark Malawanga. We come from the land down under. Can you see, can you feel the wonder? Bookmark Malawangan, living under one sun.
You are Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And apologies to our listener. We were meant to get Mitch, the newly elected Assistant Secretary for CPSU Victoria, on our program today. But yeah, we haven't been able to get through to him. So I actually thought I would actually draw from the article. We'll do a bit of a report drawing on the Green Left article that was published on this. But basically, there's been a huge victory for rank-and-file unionism, with the Voice for Members ticket winning the community and public sector union election in Victoria. Now, the Australian Electoral Commission has actually released the official results on July 16th, and Giselle Hanna, who's also a fellow 3CR presenter, won the secretary position, and other AAF Australian Voice for Members won 4 executive positions and 23 out of the 34 branch council positions. Now, this is the first time, this election result is historic for a number of reasons, because this is the first time in 32 years that former leader Karen Batt and her CPSU United ballot team have had to contest an election. Batt and the Jacinta Allen Labor government are said to be surprised. However, given that conditions are being eroded, wage growth is glacial and employment precarious, they should not be. And really, to give a bit of a background, you know, why Australian Voice for Members won, you know, they managed to build a member-led... They built a campaign around a member-led platform of solidarity and active participation that sought to respond to critical issues. And really, one of the big contexts for how this kind of ticket formed was that, you know, there was a lot of dissatisfaction with the recent enterprise bargain agreement, which prompted the Australian Voice for Members to form CPSU United. Which prompted the Australian Voices for Members to form. But on the other hand, the CPSU United described the agreement as a huge success, claiming it had negotiated a significant wage rise and benefits, but it failed to challenge the mandated wage cap and accepted a 12% wage rise over 4 years, lagging behind inflation. And I think, you know, there's been kind of reports that, you know, the Australian Nurses and Midwife Federation and the Victorian Ambulance Union, including the Police Association of Victoria, because they are technically public sector That's workers, but they all challenged the unfair wage caps, with the ANMF winning a 28.4% pay rise over 4 years. So, in a sense, the CPSU, before this election, actually failed to kind of advocate for its members. It basically capitulated to the government, and it helped undermine other unions in their enterprise bargaining negotiations. Now, Australian Voices for Members campaigned for a member-led union willing to take on the fight for better working conditions and to stand with other unions in their battle for just wages. And I think probably the other kind of context as well is, you know, while wages have fallen behind inflation, we're also having this situation, as reported in this article, where public servants are also facing precarious employment. Helen Silver's independent review of the Victorian Public Service, or Silverview, is assessing inefficiencies and has said that she wants to return the public service to its pre-pandemic size. If unchallenged, this will likely lead to job cuts. The 2020-25 budget has flagged that 1,200 jobs will have to go, with hundreds more expected to follow. And I think really the ticket responded by attending a series of actions at Victorian Parliament, and there was also they constructed the Gold Review, which is a comprehensive counter proposal to the Silver Review, and I think this the fact that that the Australian Voices for Member put out this sort of alternative kind of job plan, I think very much drew media attention. And I think really something really impressive about this campaign that's got to highlight is Australian Voices for Member coordinated a very impressive union member-led ground campaign in June. You know, the government departments and the CBD were leafleted almost daily by Australian Voices for Members. Members door-knocked thousands of houses across the state, making a particular effort to engage with regional CPSU members in Bendigo, Wodonga and Geelong. And of course, it was the first time in a long time for many to hear from the union, with more volunteers joining each week. The effect was compounding. And Australia Voices for Members' sustained effort to mobilise members with its platform led to one of the highest election turnouts in CPSU history. The ticket won about 70% of the total votes cast. And I think, you know, one thing I'll just sort of add to this, because I happened to attend the celebration last Friday, and I think just one kind of impression I like to kind of add there is what was really impressive was I think that, just in terms of my own comments to add this, I think that this the victory of this ticket's significance cannot be understated in term for the left. Like, I think this is a real kind of breakthrough for rank and file unionism, and I think it will very much set an example that will inspire other examples to kind of follow. We're already aware that there's a similar ticket in the federal CPSU being kind of formed and being built, but of course the elections for that I think won't happen till for another year and a half. That's just off the top of my head, and I think there's a lot of and I think what was quite evident at the celebration was there was a lot of representation from different trade unions, a lot of key left-wing activists all kind of participated. Like, yeah, when you think about it, the left rarely has victories of this kind of scale, and I think this is a very impressive kind of result for the organised left, and we hope that this victory can inspire others to kind of take to go for even further.
Yeah, and we like to, you know, say a big congratulations to the team on this historic and incredible win for A Voice for Members, and yeah, what an impressive union member-led ground campaign. And sorry we couldn't bring you Mitch van der Wert Holman, the new elect, but I think we did interview him before the election result on June 6th. So if you wanted to listen to his interview, you can go to 3cr.org.au/greenleftradio and listen to his interview there. But yeah, we might have Mitch back on the show another time to talk about the victory and what the future holds and what they have planned.
Yeah, and I expect that we'll have coverage in Green Left of any kind of future campaigns that they lead in the next several years, and for listeners' info, you know, you can read the article that I just drew from the pages of Green Left on when you go on greenleft.org.au. And and the article is titled "Historic Win for A Voices for Members in Vic CPSU." Anyway, I might just go play a quick announcement and maybe we can just go play another song and then go straight into the activist calendar. You're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM.
Has Centrelink made a decision you disagree with? Most Centrelink decisions can be appealed up to 3 times. Examples of decisions you can appeal include whether you're eligible for a payment, cancellation or suspension of your payment, how much you get paid, and Centrelink debts. One of the most common Centrelink decisions appealed are Centrelink debts. Centrelink will say you owe a debt if the staff determine you've been paid more than you should have. Debts can occur for a variety of reasons. In some instances, if there's been an administrative error or if you have special circumstances, you may not have to repay that debt. The appeal process is free, but time limits can apply and will affect your entitlement to back payment. Social Security Rights Victoria is a specialist community legal centre providing Victorians free advice to help you understand your Centrelink issues and the appeal processes. You can contact Social Security Rights Victoria on 9481 0355 or online at ssrv.org.au. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM. And we're now joined today and we're going to be basically playing another song and then we're going to go into the Green Left kind of activist calendar. So we have a song by Dusty the Kid, which is titled Where the Wild Birds Call. Dusty the Kid does a lot of politically kind of charged kind of folk kind of music, and one of his work was actually featured in Matt Ward's sort of monthly column on 10 new albums to bring sanity to a mad world. So yeah, he was featured in the album roundup by Matt Ward, who regularly writes for Green Left, basically highlighting some of the left wing kind of orientated kind of music all around from around the world. So yeah, hope listeners enjoy. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
Underpass, I heard somebody cry, oh, forgive us for the ones we leave behind. Filthy highway, don't the sun look angry, don't the sun look angry at me. Smeared the blood across my face, was the use of saving grace. Thieves hanging on either side of me. But I heard there is a place where the wild birds do call, where one day we'll be forgiven if we make it there at all. It is written in the rail yards and on dirty bathroom walls. There is a place where the wild birds save the labor of their own, where the candles dance all night in a thousand little holes, where the door is always open and the whiskey always flows, and the hanging tree grows heavy with ribbons and with bows.
All right, you're just listening to Where the Wild Birds Call by Dusty the Kid. And actually, something to kind of promote actually about this is you can listen to their music on Bandcamp, which is actually, I'll just highlight, it's probably the most ethical way to consume music and very much gives... It's the best way of directly supporting artists, and especially since you're kind of meant to be boycotting Spotify right now anyway. So we've I think Spotify recently made a deal with an AI sort of weapons company that is very much complicit in the genocide in Gaza. Also, Spotify is terrible for artists anyway. So Now, I'll go with, it's now time, it's 8 a.m. and it's now time for the Green Left Activist Calendar. So the first event I want to highlight is Socialist Alliance hosts regular kind of introductory online discussions called titled Capitalism, Socialism and the Socialist Alliance. And they'll be happening at 5:30 p.m. online via Zoom. And yeah, I think if you can get the details of the Zoom link and everything by going on to the Green Left website at greenleft.org.au. And then I'll pass on to Chloe to advertise the next event.
Saturday tomorrow, July 19th, there's going to be a speak out. It's called 12 Years Too Long. Refugees are welcome here. It says 2 p.m. Burke Street Mall, corner Burke Street, Swanson Street, but it's actually, oh gosh, I actually thought it was at 11, but it's actually at 2. All right, I was wrong, but this is, this will be a small speak out, but it's actually quite significant because we're marking that 12 years ago on 19th July 2013, Labour Prime Minister Kevin Rudd declared that asylum seekers arriving by boat would be sent to Nauru and Manus Island and would never be settled here in Australia. And that announcement and racist policy really opened up one of the darkest chapters in Australia's shameful history of immigration detention. So we'll be hearing from a few speakers, this is run by the Refugee Action Collective. So I hope to see some of you there.
All right. And then on Saturday, the 19th of July, there's going to be a Liberation Literature Club. One day everyone will have always been against this. That's actually a new book that's come out recently that I'm actually been quite keen to read. So anyway, that's going to be happening at 2 p.m. at the Black Spark Cultural Centre. And then there's going to be a film screening as part of the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, Palestinians don't Need Sidewalks. And that's going to be happening at the Cinema Nova, and you can kind of book your tickets at the Cinema Nova. I just checked and there's still plenty of tickets available. So yeah, that's just going to be happening at 5:30 p.m. at the Cinema Nova. Then from Saturday, July 20th until Tuesday, July 22nd, there's going to be the Convergence on Canberra. Join the United Call to Sanction Israel in response to the genocide on Palestine. Now, a lot of the bus bookings that had been organised for Free Palestine Melbourne had been now closed, and I'm actually going to be going on a minivan to Canberra. But there is going to, that Hume for Palestine has actually organised a bus that's going exclusively on Tuesday for the Tuesday kind of protests on July 22nd, which is going to be taking place on the opening of Parliament. I highly recommend if you have a day free to head up to Canberra to actually attend the conventions by going.
It's only $20.
Yeah, it's only $20.
And free if you're Indigenous as well.
Yeah, so I think I definitely recommend being part of that. It's going to be happening. Yeah, just get you can find the details by going onto the Hume for Palestine Instagram, which will have the link, including the details of going to book. Now, just the other thing to highlight, there'll still be a weekly protest. If you're not going to Canberra, there's still a weekly protest that's going to be happening for Palestine at 12 o'clock on Sunday, July 2nd and the 20th. And there's going to be a smoking ceremony at 2:30 p.m. at Camp Sovereignty at the King's Domain. Then on Wednesday, July the 25th, there's going to be a fundraiser, Stand Up for Palestine Comedy, and that's going to be happening at 7 p.m. at the Grace Darling Hotel at 114 Smith Street in Collingwood. And then on Thursday, July the 24th, there'll be a conference, Treaty of Lausanne, Partition, Denial, Massacre, Kurdish Struggle in the Future of Kurdistan, and that's going to be happening at 9 a.m. at the Victorian University Theatre, M0011, Footscray Park, 70 Ballarat Street, Ballarat Road, Footscray. And then on Friday, July the 25th, there'll be another Introduction to Socialism discussion happening at 5:30 p.m. And then just some other events to highlight. Oh, yes, there'll be on Saturday, July the 26th, there'll be the Midwinter Fest, a celebration of independent and activist media at 6:30 p.m. at the Geelong Trades Hall at 127 Myer Street in Geelong. And then on Saturday, July 26th, the same date, there is also going to be another film screening of Palestinians Don't Need Sidewalks, and that's going to be happening at... that's going to be happening at the FOMO cinema. I think that's going to be actually good. That's going to be a very good event. And FOMO cinema is actually quite a good cinema as well. On Saturday, August the 2nd, there's going to be a rally, Hands Off Public Housing, at 11 a.m. at the State Library in the Swanson Street in the city. And then on Wednesday, August the 6th, there's going to be a vigil, 80 years since Hiroshima Day, at 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at St. Paul's Cathedral. And then on Saturday, August the 9th, there's going to be the Green Left Comedy Debate, Billionaires Should Run the Government, and that's going to be happening at 6:30 p.m. at the Brunswick Town Hall, 223 Sydney Road in Brunswick.
And just also on that, on the Saturday, August 9th, at 12 p.m. at Dandenong Market, we're going to have a Palestine rally, Sanction Israel. We're going to be hopefully hearing from a young Palestinian woman who came here from Gaza last year. So it would be quite powerful to hear from her. And we're probably going to march to Julian Hill's office, the local Labour MP that recently signed off on the... that Gazan woman's visa being cancelled. So, yeah, that would be an important action to get to as well if you're in the southeast.
All right. And the last event I just want to highlight is there's going to be on Tuesday, August the 12th, there's going to be a protest rally, Defend the Right to Protest, at 5:30 p.m. at the Parliament of Victoria. And then from September 5th to the 7th, there's going to be the Eco-Socialism 2025 conference, Eco-Socialism Not Barbarism, at the Ballan Place, 15 Phoenix Street in Brunswick. All right, so I'm just going to go play, actually, I might just go play a quick song. We're going to have our next interview soon. So I was just going to co-play a short song by Roleta Parra, the song titled La Carta. And you're listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR 855 AM, and I hope this is a joy. And actually, just the last thing, a lot of the events that we highlighted can actually be read on the Green Left Access calendar by going on to greenleft.org.au/events.
Con grillo por la calle lo arrastraron, sí. es el motivo que ha cometido Roberto, haber apoyado el paro que ya se había resuelto. Si acaso esto es un motivo, presa también voy, sargento, sí. Yo que me encuentro tan lejos, esperando una noticia, me viene a decir la carta que en mi patria no hay justicia. Los hambrientos piden pan, plomo les da la milicia, sí. De esta manera pomposa, quieren conservar su asiento. Me pide contestación. Yo pido que se propale por toda la población que el león es un sanguinario en toda generación, sí. Habrás visto insolencia, barbarie y alevosía de presentar el trabuco y matar a sangre fría a quien defensa no tiene con las dos manos vacías, sí. Por suerte tengo guitarra para llorar mi dolor. También tengo nueve hermanos fuera del que se engrilló. Los nueve son izquierdistas con el favor de mi Dios.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and you just heard a song by Violeta Parra. So she was one of the greatest exponents of Chilean music and made music committed to workers' struggle, protest song movement, and drew attention to traditional Chilean folklore and native instruments and disregarded the foreign invasion of imperialist music. So I hope you enjoyed her voice. And now we're really excited to welcome Sadie Simmons in the studio with us. Good morning, Sadie.
Hi, thank you for having me on today.
And their mum is here as well in the studio. Welcome, mum. So Sadie recently, unfortunately, got sacked from ALDE. They're a RAFU member, and it's the, can I say the name of the store?
Yeah, that should be fine.
Kilo Downs, she's a Kilo Downs store health and safety representative. And I guess we just wanted to start by, maybe you can tell listeners a little bit about the events leading up to this, you know, your unjust sacking.
Yeah, so there are some things that I can't really say on here, yeah. But yeah, I was a HSR, which is a health and safety representative for those who don't know. And I was just been trained only in March at Trades Hall Council. And I was really passionate about safety, especially because there was a lot of, safety issues at my work. And, you know, I wanted to do something about it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's very admirable. And, you know, as the health and safety representative, you know, you should have been taken seriously instead of discriminated against. Are you kind of allowed to describe, I know it's in a media release, but did you want to give listeners a little bit of an idea of what the working conditions were like for you and other workers at ALDE?
Yeah, so I can definitely go into that. There was a very big issue with occupational violence and customer aggression. This was predominantly due to the unsafe bag check policy that ALDE runs, where workers are pressured into doing bag checks on customers, which as you can imagine, isn't always met with, you know, complete happiness or anything from the general public. So there was lots of incidents of assault. I myself was assaulted as a consequent of doing the bag check policy. But yeah, like I've seen co-workers left with bruises around their neck, people, you know, getting stitches because of it. And yeah, so it was a very big issue, but there were others too.
Yeah, I used to work at Coles, and I used to remember I was forced by management to ask every customer to look inside their bag, and it's a very intimidating thing. You're basically accusing people of theft when most people are honest and they're frustrated customers, and yeah, that's really awful. But it is interesting that, like, all you really did, I mean, you were standing up for the workers and you were trying to bring this to management's attention, but you actually gave copies of surveys to Aldi management. They were downloaded. These surveys were about workplace stress, and they were actually downloaded from the Victorian Trade Hall Council website.
Yeah, so during my HSR course, which was only in the end of March, so again, I haven't been a HSR for very long, we were given like tools to use at our stores, and one of them were surveys, which I had printed out from the like Victorian Trades Hall OHS website. Mm. You know, very reputable, reputable place. And yeah, so I conducted the surveys because, you know, I had a lot of complaints about workplace stress from my designated work group, like all of the staff at the store. So, you know, I wanted to do this to kind of be able to present to management and show them that there was a massive issue and we needed to do something about it. It was completely anonymous as well. Everyone did it willingly. Like, I wasn't forcing anyone to do these surveys. And yeah, when I presented the statistics to them, yeah, they wouldn't let me share it with people. And to this day, nothing's been done about those statistics as well, from what I've heard.
It's shocking. I can see why they wanted to keep it under wraps, because the statistics that you uncovered are very alarming. 79% of workers are suffering from fatigue, and 72% are suffering from headaches, and over 80% experience conflict at work, with 40% reporting severe exposure to customer violence and aggression you were talking about before.
Yeah.
Just before we move on, Jacob, did you have any questions for Sadie? Because I want to ask her about the RAFU campaign against Aldi.
Well, I mean, I'm just to kind of follow up with this whole thing about doing the kind of bag checks. I mean, especially, I guess, one of the other issues with the kind of bag checks is obviously the way it's often kind of done at workplaces can often be kind of discriminatory. Like, I mean, I guess for one example for me is, I mean, I always have like a bag with me, but of course I can't actually remember any time where I've actually had asked my bag to be checked. Probably the only time really is possibly if I go to JB Hi-Fi or something, but I've never had my bag being asked to be checked at Coles or Woolworths or sort of Aldi. And of course, I mean, even though I'm...
What are you trying to say, Jake? I guess, you don't look suspicious.
More the comment I was going to follow up with more, you know, I'm someone who does pass off as looking white, etc. Mm. I guess I want to kind of hear if you had any sort of comments of anything you sort of observed in terms of those, especially since Kilo Downs is obviously, you know, quite a diverse area as well. It's in the kind of western sort of suburbs of Melbourne.
Yeah. In regards to Coles and Woolworths, I know that they don't actively have any bag check policies after, you know, incidents, and they were forced to remove their bag checks policies. But with Aldi, like, I can't speak for every store, because store to store usually can be pretty different, and also person to person, because there are some people who just don't do bag checks. Like, I myself refuse to do them. Some other people refuse to do them, or they just only do them when management are around. So sometimes it can seem like that. But I know at my store, the people who did do the bag checks did it to everyone. Mm-hmm. But I do agree that in some stores, or, you know, in some instances, it definitely can be discriminatory. and targeted, but I would say for my store at Aldi, it was certainly not targeted towards specific races or anything. But again, I can't say that is the same for every other store.
Yeah. And there was a big, there was a solidarity rally called in solidarity with you by RAFU, I think it was, about a week or so ago. Yeah. And, yeah, maybe you can just tell us a little bit about the RAFU campaign against Aldi and maybe how they're supporting, how the union is supporting you and other workers right now.
Yeah, there are some things that I can't disclose yet,
yeah.
But we are taking them to court, obviously, because what they did was unjust. Yeah, with the RAFU campaign, luckily we've had a lot of solidarity from other unions, which has been really, you know, a bit overwhelming to see the support. But yeah, like if I hadn't had the union during this time,
yeah.
I don't know what I would have done because, you know, I wouldn't have been able to get legal support. I wouldn't have known what to say in meetings. I wouldn't have known, you know, how this whole kind of process goes. Mm. So, yeah, like I'm so very grateful to RAFU because, yeah, they've really shown up for me. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go, listeners. Join your union yeah. if you haven't already.
And if you're in retail, join RAFU.
Yes.
There may be others, but RAFU is the best.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wonderful. Really glad to hear that there is a supportive campaign to reinstate your job as well. Unless, Jacob, you wanted to like ask Sadie anything else, maybe we can wrap up the interview. Was there anything, any final comments that you wanted to make? Or is there, you know, maybe point people to how they can support you and the RAFU campaign?
Yeah, so if you're interested in the campaign, checking out RAFU's socials, you'll be able to stay up to date with kind of what's going on with the campaign, because I think we are going to be doing something extra about the bag checks like soon as well, not just for Aldi, but yeah, for all retail workers. But yeah, I just, everyone who's listening, like under, I think it's, yeah, section 21(1) of the OHS Act, your employer has a duty to provide a workplace safe from like harm to health and safety so far as reasonably practicable. So yeah, remember that if there are issues at your work, health and safety issues at your work, don't be afraid to speak up. Just because of what happened to me won't mean that that's going to happen to everyone. And it's important that we speak up about these things so it doesn't keep happening.
Hear, hear.
Yeah. And thank you very much, Sadie, for being on our program.
Thank you for having me.
Thank yeah. you, Sadie. And yeah, I hope, and I think listeners would have really appreciated you coming in and having a chat with us. And for listeners who just tuned in, we were speaking with Sadie, who is was the health and safety representative at Aldi, recently sacked for carrying out her health and safety duties, really.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, I might just go play a quick announcement. You're listening to Green Left Radio.
Stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
Started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our lands back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Thank you. going to have anything nuclear in our country.
It's really important and urgent that Australia get serious about nuclear disarmament.
Well, nobody anywhere on the planet has figured out how to deal with highly radioactive waste.
Most of those who've managed nuclear weapons consider this to be the most dangerous time that we've ever lived in, with the danger of nuclear war at unprecedented levels.
You're listening to Radical Radio 3CR.
CR is a community radio license holder. What you hear on community radio is governed by the Community Radio Codes of Practice. The Codes of Practice cover matters relating to program content, including local content, news, current affairs, Australian music content, programs for children, and the responsibilities associated with broadcasting by and for the community. They also cover aspects such as community access and participation in how 3CR operates. Copies of the codes are available from our website. Go to 3cr.org.au/who we are.
You're back listening to Green Left Radio on 3CR, and we've still got Sadie, the unionist, in the studio with us, and yeah, they're going to end our show, introduce a song that we're going to play.
Yeah, so this next song is Louder Than a Bomb by Public Enemy.
They claim we're products from the bottom of hell, 'cause the black is back and it's bound to sell. Picture us cooling out on the 4th of July. And if you heard we were celebrating, that's a worldwide lie. Yo, Chuck, the Fat Data Rules Man trying to pull a 226 on you, G. Yo, man, show 'em what you got. Show 'em what you got.
This style seems wild. Wait before you treat me like a stepchild. Let me tell you why they got me on file. 'Cause I give you what you like. Come right in, exact. I status is the status, so I care where you're at. Black in that home.
Tell me why I'm in deep. Google, man.
I teach and speak, so when it's spoken, no joke. No voice of choice, I play shapes with bass. Go one for the treble, the rhythm is the rebel. Here's a funky rhyme that they're tapping on. Just thinking I'm breaking the beats I'm rapping on. CIA, FBI, all they tell us is lies. When I say it, they get along, cause I'm louder than a bomb.
All right. You're just listening to Louder Than a Bomb. But yeah, we've actually just reached the end of our program. I'd like to thank all our listeners and guests for being on our program this week. And yeah, we'll see you kind of next Friday for a more radical radio.
Catch you next week.
What happened? This brings us to the end of the show. You have been listening to Friday Morning Breakfast with Green Left Radio, brought to you by Green Left Weekly Newspaper, which brings an alternative source of information that puts people and planet before profit.
If you like our work, become a supporter from $5 per month at greenleft.org.au/support or free call 1-800-634-206.
Arise, you workers from your slumbers. Arise, you prisoners of want. For reason in revolt now thunders and at last ends the age of Khan. Away with all your superstitions, serve all masses,
arise!
We'll change henceforth the old tradition and spurn the dust to win the prize. That's right, the commies are back, reds underneath your beds in that crack.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.